Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Michael and Patty Show. I'm Michael.
And I'm Patty.
Are you sure?
Yes, I am.
Welcome to another episode coming to you live from the Charlottetown waterfront, looking up directly at the yacht club. Everything is ice. It's white, except for a channel, which probably brought the Irving oil liner in.
Yeah, you can see it cutting a complete line through the ice that wasn't there last week.
Fun fact, if you're buying oil, whether it's for your car or heating oil or gasoline, it all comes from one place. Where's that?
Irving.
And then the trucks fill up in Charlottetown and disperse it over the whole island. Getting started here, and if you haven't listened to this podcast before, shame on you. You need to go back and listen to the prior 71 or so episodes to make sure you gather information. We talk about everything Prince Edward Island real estate, everything PEI. And a lot of stuff we discuss in real estate is just generalities, which would probably cover anything in North America, both the U.S. and Canadian markets, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it's very general real estate. The same concept process applies no matter where you're located on most of the topics that we discuss.
Even though how many times has someone come up to you and said, oh, well, in Ontario, we do things this way, or in Arizona, we do things that way. It's all the same stuff. Patty and I have been educated all over the States and Canada, probably more so in the States than Canada. And it's all the same stuff, other than the local rules, regulations, and laws, and the forms. It's the same principles. So we should rename the show.
What would you like to rename it to?
We'll call it Patty and Michael Podcast.
And that doesn't work for our maps.
Well, that's true. It would screw up the acronym.
Yes.
Getting into some topics here today, Pennywise and Clown Foolish, we've discussed this before, but in this case, it was actually pretty funny or comedic in the sense that we had a property owner selling a building lot to a buyer that was unrepresented. Neither one of them had real estate agents, and the buyer was fortunate enough to buy a building lot that had already been sold to somebody else. Thought I heard about this happening with swampland in Florida decades ago.
Yeah, well, in this situation, this particular property owner had been having representation and using a realtor in the past. However, and that lot was actually previously sold through a realtor, you would like to think, because he did use the same lawyer for the transactions, that perhaps the lawyer would have even picked it up. But this property owner didn't, the lawyer didn't. And they ended up selling the same piece of land twice. And unfortunately, it dragged out for over 2 years trying to remedy the whole situation.
So he was penny wise and found foolish. He probably, looking back, probably would have used representation, or one of them should have used some representation that knows how to read a map or a survey.
Yeah, and a really good point. Many will assume you pull up on our Geolink, which is our government website. And as much as it is kept as up-to-date as possible, it is not 100% accurate. So in this particular case, this property owner asked for me, they stopped into my office and asked for an up-to-date geo map showing which properties, you know, were owned and which ones had been sold. So on that given day, I did. And as we've discussed in previous episodes, the government is even smart enough to say that, you know, this information may not be accurate or correct, and it's to be verified. So they took it as it was 100% true. Therefore, that's what put them into that situation, instead of maybe having their own log, their own systems, their lawyer.
Well, they should have referenced to a survey, not a Geolink. The Geolink service is probably one of the best tools that you can have as a buyer. Because it gives you mapping, it gives you the tax rolls, it gives you the neighbor's report so you know who all your neighbors are. It gives you all kinds of stuff, access to surveys, both past, present. What am I missing?
Measuring, it's got measuring tools.
Deeds, it's got all the tax documents on there, measuring tools.
Covenants,
restrictive covenants, anything affixed to the deed, which would be your covenants, any liens, any discharges, any monkey business at all that's going on with that property is registered to that PID number. Now, you can use the Geolink service, but it is kind of expensive.
Yeah, there is a monthly fee.
No, there's no monthly fee. It's a cost per click of the mouse.
Oh, well, if you're going to use it like that.
We pay a monthly fee. So if you want to become a real estate agent, PEI, you can get access to GeoLink on a monthly fee.
Okay.
Probably don't want to do that.
Use a realtor. They have access to all this information for you.
Now, our next topic is something that we cover from time to time and experience from time to time where people think through their own property manager and they end up bringing people into their units, whether they're renting a house or apartment units or whatever the case may be, townhouses, and they find out that that tenant wasn't exactly as they portrayed themselves, because just like when they're applying for a job, they're always going to put their best foot forward, dress to the nines, look like they're the perfect tenant, smile, have their children all dressed up, poodle just got a haircut, everything looks great and wonderful. But what questions do you ask that potential tenant before they sign a lease? And the lease is by far probably one of the most important documents you'll ever sign in real estate, because it can really affect you down the road and also affect your income and expenses. So make sure your lease is well written, and I'd probably suggest a lawyer look it over, and you're just not using a form that's downloaded from a website. In this case, in PEI, a lot of people will download them from IRAC, irac.pe.ca, which is the body that governs rentals.
Yes. So are we going to cover some of the questions?
I'm glad you asked that. Before we get into these questions, there's a few of them, so we're going to whip through them really fast. So feel free to rewind the podcast or download the transcript, if there is one.
Yeah, we could always do that for this.
Probably the best tip I can give anybody, having rented properties out for myself and others, and I'm going to ask you for your number one tip, assuming you didn't steal my tip, show up at their house or their apartment where they're currently living on a Friday or Saturday night around 7 or 8 o'clock at night. That's going to be a very good indication of how they live, how clean their apartment or their house is. And if you find you go over there and it's party central and there's 45 people there, that is going to traverse to your rental unit. Wouldn't you agree? People are not going to change the way they live just because they've rented another unit.
No, I would agree. That would be what I would say. But I wouldn't just say one set, 7, 8 o'clock on a Friday, Saturday night. I would...
2 a.m. in the morning.
2 a.m., sure. I would say, because don't rush into making a decision to quickly fill the unit. I would recommend driving by that property at different times, but at least, 2 or 3 times minimum, just to get a real good idea of what's going on, who they are, how they keep their property. That would be what I would recommend as well.
You mean you're taking my tip as your tip?
That is what I would recommend and suggest
don't
they do,
but
not
tip.
But not just once. And references would be my other.
Well, that's something else we're going to get into. The phone rings. Joe Schmo that wants to rent your unit calls. Ring, ring, ring. Did you just willy-nilly get out of your house and jump in your car and show Joe Smith or Joe Blow the unit? No.
That's what, probably no different than in the real estate business.
Same with in the real estate business, that 95% of the agents are just going to jump in their car or truck and show that property or show up for a listing appointment. Both Patty and I believe in pre-screening buyers, sellers, and in this case, tenants. So what do you ask before you even show the property?
Yeah, we could call this the tenant's intake questionnaire.
Let's refer to it as the tenant interrogation methodology.
Okay.
So you're going to ask them, what is your reason for moving? That's another way of saying, do they just kick you out for not paying you, destroying the place and burning the kitchen table down? When are you looking to move in? How many people will be living in the house? We're going to assume this is a house. Do you have any pets? If applicable, ask size, breed, and behavior. Do you smoke? This doesn't necessarily mean indicate if they're on fire. What is your employment situation? Can you provide references from previous landlords? And what I always do, if I talk to a reference, whether it's a job or a tenant or whatever, I ask those references for potential references. Because what I want to do is I want to find the references that haven't been planted to give good reviews. Because you know how it is. Someone's looking for a job. They phone you or I up and say, I'm going to be applying for this job. Can you give them a good review? Of course, right?
Yes.
But what you want is you want to know other places they've stayed that they're not giving that landlord information out. Have you ever been evicted? You had a note here.
Yes. How long have you lived at your last residence? Is this a person that's kind of bouncing around from place to place?
Are you comfortable with a credit and background check? What is your monthly income?
And another thing that I, listening to the list of questions, Michael, that popped into my head was perhaps, which we do as well in our industry and business, check out their social media. See what kind of presence they have out there. What kind of things are they saying? You know, who are they?
Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Threads.
Yeah, I would go that extra step.
YouTube's a good one. There's a lot of crazy stuff on there. Remember that one guy years ago was making all those crazy YouTube videos and he moved to PEI?
I can't remember that, but...
I'll refresh your memory.
Sure.
After. We'll post the links.
No.
Next, the in-person or virtual interview. I wouldn't suggest virtual interviews. I would suggest an in-person meeting. Correct?
100%.
Because you've asked them if they smoke, and they show up and they say they don't smoke, yet they smell like a cigar. Well, you know they smoke, right?
Yeah, if you can, because there's people that move from out of province. But if it is an option to meet in person, try to do that as a priority.
Once you've seen the house, or once they've seen the house and are interested, we're going to ask them some more detailed questions. The main thing is the financial stability, wouldn't you agree?
Yes.
I'll let you cover that.
So the financial stability, some of the questions that you'd want to ask. Now, all of this is not to take away from the value of a property manager, but it's to give you an idea, if anything, what a property manager as well does throughout their process, but to give you a little bit of insight, assistance, and if you do choose to do this on your own.
I would suggest that you use a property manager, but I'd also make sure the property manager is asking them these types of questions.
I agree. What is your current job? How long have you been employed there? Do you have pay stubs, a letter from your employer, or proof of income? Will you be able to pay first and last month's rent up front? Do you have an outstanding debts that might impact your ability to pay rent? And have you ever declared bankruptcy or filed a consumer proposal, which is basically the same? So these are your questions for financial stability. Next is rental history and lifestyle. Can I contact your current and previous landlords for a reference? And they would probably be a better one than like what you were referring to, Michael, a planted reference. Planted references would be probably a family member or a good friend, but your previous landlords or employers are not going to, they're just going to say what, you know, the truth. How long have you lived at your current residence? Why are you leaving your current home? Have you ever been late on rent payments? If so, what happened? Do you have any roommates or people who will be living with you part-time? And that's a really important question because they may, when you ask, who else are you going to be living with? Well, I'm only going to be, you know, living on my own, which in their mind, full-time, this is going to be my unit, but I am going to be having these people who are going to be probably crashing, whether it's Monday through Friday or every weekend. You want to know because of the additional wear and tear, depending on how you have your rent structured or utilities included, you need to know this information to protect yourself and to protect your property. How often do you have visitors or overnight guests? Do you own any large furniture or items that require special accommodations? All very good points.
Next, we get into cleanliness and home maintenance. So we're asking them, and this is, I wouldn't ask them this. This is when you show up. How do you typically keep your home clean and maintained? Do you have any housekeeping routines? Have you had any issues with pests in your previous home? If they've had an infestation of mice, rats, insects, bugs, ants.
Yeah, bed bugs.
Bed bugs.
You don't want that in your property.
Absolutely. If something breaks in the unit, how would you handle it? This is important because you don't want to get nickeled and dimed and driven nuts every time a 50-cent item fails, and this is leads back to the lease. And some leases you can put in there that the tenant is responsible for any repairs up to X dollars. Of course, everything we're saying here obviously has to abide by local laws and bylaws and regulations. So don't put anything in your lease that contradicts that. Again, this is why it's a good idea to have a property manager, preferably your lawyer, look over your lease. How do you handle taking out trash and recycling? Well, this is an interesting one because I rented a house out once and their methodology for getting rid of the trash was to stack all of it for an entire 9 months into the shed, right up to the roof, which turned into a scene from The Deliverance because when I opened the door, about 500 rats ran out around me.
Yeah,
I would have had a video of that.
No, I don't think anyone would want to watch that again.
Very, very cool. Adjust additional vetting strategies. We're going to request documentation here.
Which is the proof of income, which would be like pay stubs, tax returns, employment letter, credit check. You can use services like Equifax, TransUnion, or rent check. Background check, check for criminal history and past evictions, tenant application form, collect details from like your local employment history references and consent, obviously, for checks. Check their current living situation. If possible, visit their current home to see how they maintain it. If they refuse, consider asking for pictures or a virtual tour. So one of the things that just popped into my mind is perhaps you'd go to their place to sign the new lease agreement.
That's what we've already said about showing up at night.
Yeah, showing up just to do drive-bys and that, but to actually show up and think, okay, yeah, looks like we're going to be entering into an arrangement, an agreement here, and I will meet you at your place to get this signed up.
I wouldn't tell them that. I'd just say I have some documentation I'd like you to view and then take another look through their house or their rental apartment or whatever to make that decision.
Yeah, I would not up to this point assume that you've already been inside their home, but this is an opportunity to get inside their home is what I'm thinking through the process. I've rented many properties over the years and I wouldn't be allowing a landlord. This may get them in the door if it's a matter of signing the agreement. Cleanliness, is the home tidy or messy? Damage, are there holes in the walls, broken appliances or neglected issues? Odors or signs of smoking, pets, smell of smoke, pet damage or excessive clutter can also impact the, if you did end up wanting to sell your property, the saleability of it. See if there's kids climbing up the walls, you know, their floor trim in their current place, jumping all over the kitchen cabinets. Another place without being able to invade their current living space that you could possibly, in a very casual way, check out, is walk them to their vehicle when you're done your initial meeting of them. Most people's vehicles are a reflection of how they keep their home. So I would just casually walk over with them, keeping the conversation going, just saying, yeah, I don't mind. I'll just walk to your vehicle so we can just finish this and take a peek. Take a peek and see.
Do you get them to open the trunk too?
No, I wouldn't do that. Again, this is all to be, you're just trying to be inconspicuous about your vetting.
And when you call those previous landlords and referrals from previous landlords, what do you ask? You ask them if they paid the rent on time. Did they keep the unit in good condition? Did they cause any trouble with the neighbors? Would you rent to them again? All good questions. You're also going to call their employee, find out their status, salary, job stability, which you may need written permission from them, which would be on your application with a proviso to ask the employer those questions, providing they won't give you the information. And PEI, we're pretty open here, but I could see in a bigger city they would be adverse to supplying that information. Red flags to watch out for, inconsistent or vague answers about rental history or employment. Just like real estate, when a transaction starts off with a bunch of stories, what does it end up with?
Mm.
It ends up with a thick file and more stories.
More stories.
No transaction completed. So if they're inconsistent, vague, or they have stories, that is a big red flag. Reluctance to provide references or documents, bad reviews from previous landlords, unpaid rent, property damage, complaints, overeagerness to move in immediately without proper screening. This leads back to questions. If they have some urgent priority to move into that unit tomorrow afternoon, chances are there might be something there.
I would agree.
Like they've been kicked out. Unstable income or lack of proof of employment, excessive requests to modify lease terms, poor credit history or history of evictions. I don't think you're going to see too many people wanting to modify the lease terms unless they do have a background in legalese, but I suppose it's possible.
Yeah, and all I'm going to add, because you kind of touched on it a bit, is if the relationship feels like it's starting off a little difficult, you just can't seem to coordinate times, they're evasive with their questions or their answers of your questions. In our business, if it starts off difficult, it is not going to get any better, and it is going to be difficult all the way through. So make sure that you are aware of that. The final steps, collecting a security deposit and sign a lease, use a legally binding lease agreement that outlines rent rules and expectations. Make sure that you, again, have this vetted by your province, a lawyer, that your lease is tight and it best serves, obviously, the both interests, that your interest is protected as the property owner, as well as the tenant has some rights as well. Document move-in condition, take photos, and have the tenant sign a condition report. This is very important.
That is a really good tip given to me by a property manager, and I think it's a super, super tip. But there is a slight modification. What you do is you take the pictures when you're with the new tenant, so they know you've got these photographs, so they're not going to damage the place. If you take them on your own, it's kind of just hearsay.
Yes, and it also creates a level of accountability for the tenants because they are hyper aware that they signed off on the property in the condition that it was, because they were physically there with you while this part of the process was being handled.
And if you wanted to take it even to another step further, you could take the pictures, put them in the lease, and have them initial them. Then they can't say that room wasn't in that condition. No, here's a picture. Here's your initial.
Yes, I
pay up.
Set clear expectations, explain maintenance procedures, rent payments, methods, and house rules. By following these steps, you'll significantly reduce the risk of renting to a problematic tenant. Want a tenant application form, template, or checklist? You could download one from, again, your local area, jurisdiction. We have one on our IRAC site that, again, it more so favors the tenant, I find here. So just make sure your rights are protected. You could speak to a lawyer with regards to that. PEI is pretty tenant focused.
Most markets, depending on the state, province, or municipality or community that you're in, will have a bias towards either the property owner or the renter. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes.
In this province, the bias seems to be towards the renter, whereas you go to New Brunswick, with what I've heard, in Nova Scotia, the bias seems to go towards the property owner.
Yes. My daughter rents in Halifax, and she signs a lease agreement, which I don't think would be allowed here, where she signs it for 12 months with the expectation she is to vacate the property at the end of the 12 months unless they mutually agree to extend it. And I don't think that would go over well here. I don't think they do that here.
There's an issue here where there's a shortage of rentals. And sometimes you will have, and I've had instances where you'll go in and list a property for sale. You'll ask them if they have somewhere to go, if they're tenants, and they'll say yes. And the closing comes and they say, well, we can't find an apartment. They go to IRAC. They complain, and then IRAC says, well, they can stay for X number of days until they can find another place. Again, this is all can be completely negated or avoided with a properly written lease. In fact, if they made that statement, the best thing you can do is document it. And the other tip I would have, if you're ever in that situation, regardless of where you are, is hire a lawyer.
Yes.
Because I've seen people fight on the other side as tenants, and they didn't have a lawyer, and they got beat up pretty bad because they didn't have representation, and the statements they were making were irrelevant or contradictory to laws.
Yes, getting a tenant is much the same as getting into a relationship. You start off, everything sounds like the honeymoon phase, everyone's on their best behavior, And as you go through the process in the relationship, that's, you don't unfortunately want to find out that you hooked up with somebody that is a bit of a dud.
I rented a house out to the perfect tenant once, and they used the wood stove as a primary heating source. They destroyed the walls, the carpets, they smoked, they had cigarette butts on the floor. They had the 9 months worth of garbage in the shed, and then to polish it all off, when they finally got evicted, they backed the moving truck on the front lawn in the spring and tore it all up.
Okay, so this isn't to scare people if they're looking
at... This is to scare people. Hire a property manager.
Yes, but if you are looking at getting into rental properties and you're new at this and you're wondering, what does it look like? What should I know? Hopefully this episode provides a lot of education and insight so you know what you're getting into, what you need to do, the value of a property manager. Again, don't be penny wise and pound foolish. Have a lawyer, you know, assist you or somebody that is highly trained in this, not just a friend or somebody that's had a positive experience perhaps in the past. Get somebody that's trained and a professional in property management.
If you go to YouTube, and one final note, and you search for bad experiences owning rental properties, there's all kinds of videos on there. On to the next topic. This is a conversation I've had with a number of agents in the last few months. I've experienced it myself, as has Patty. And what it is someone that lists their super overpriced property that becomes a thorn in your side. And of course, it's your fault that they just put their $150,000 property on for $600,000. They paid $50,000 for 3 years ago, and you haven't sold it. So they're driving you nuts and costing you a bunch of money for marketing. And on top of all that, they want weekly reports and bar graphs and charts and stats and all kinds of other stuff.
Explanations as to
why it hasn't sold. Yes. And it can't be the price, it has to be something you're doing
or not doing, in their opinion.
What do you have to say about that other than fire the client?
Yeah, and again, there's another example of a relationship that you're entering into, and you need to, as a realtor, do you mutually agree to represent and work with this individual? What is your time worth? How much time are you willing to, you know, put in? I know a lot of realtors feel like, well, I have X amount of hours, whether that's 10 hours or I feel like I've got, you know, 25, 30 hours invested. I can't walk away now. I'm going to, you know, I'll be at a loss. Sometimes it's just best to walk away, take the loss and move on to somebody else that's going to value, appreciate your, what you have to offer, your services, and actually, you know, translate into some, you know, an income for you to be able to pay your mortgage or rent or your living costs.
Speaking from the realtor's behalf, as far as the seller's behalf, your price is too high. It needs to be lowered. And if you don't want to lower it to that price, then don't sell it. Hang on to it forever. It may go up, it may go down. Who knows?
Yeah, and just on that as well, and I'm sure, like, resting a listing so that it can...
Well, that's the next topic. You already jumped to the next topic.
Okay.
You're screwing the system up here. Our next topic is the idea that resting your listing is going to get it sold. So what that means is you're going to take it off for some time, and then you're going to put it back on, whether that may be a few days, months. In PEI, I believe you have to leave it off for 2 weeks so you get a fine. Is that right?
Yes, it has to be off the market for 2 weeks before. From the same brokerage.
If it's been canceled, withdrawn, not expired.
And expired.
Okay, so 2 weeks. Regardless of that, in my experience, resting a listing is an idiotic idea. It doesn't achieve anything other than being on the market longer. And we've done studies on Prince Edward Island and relativity to this. And it's just, it does nothing. Just because you take your property off for a week or two and put it back on isn't going to cause it to sell.
Okay, and just for clarification, if you're switching brokerages and you're a seller wanting to change the company or the who is representing you, you can have that listing expire or cancel and the next day, immediately thereafter, sign up with a new brokerage. It's just if you allow it to expire with your your current brokerage and then want to bring it on with that same representation, that same brokerage, you do have to wait the 2 weeks. So this brings...
You had some notes here I just pointed to.
I realized that.
Brings us back to something.
To our fourth point, which it's overpriced. I was just saying, so a lot of people think, well, maybe my bread is stale. Why don't we rest it over the winter, which is this time of year and what we're experiencing or have experienced, because now people are starting to consider bringing back onto the market. But my property didn't sell. I wanted to take it off the market. I want Christmas holidays or whatever, you know, people celebrate. I don't want to deal with snow removal because I don't live on the island. I just feel I want it to have a new, fresh MLS number. I just want it to feel like a brand new listing. Now, we do click on history. We do look and see, you know, how long has this property accumulatively been on, whether with this brokerage or other brokerages. However, resting a listing just means you're missing out on those serious buyers, especially over the winter months, because there are many that buy out of necessity because of work relocations or family situations, upsizing, downsizing. You are missing out on an opportunity and only extending and delaying your days on market. So do not rest if you can avoid it. There are situations where there's new family members, babies, things like that that happen, and you just don't want to have the intrusion or the interruptions. I completely get that. But the best thing is, if you're serious about selling, leave it on the market, price your property fairly so it isn't overpriced and you're not hounding your realtor asking, why hasn't it sold? The data is the data.
Well put. Moving along, one of the most difficult questions a real estate agent gets is, what is my property worth? And I came up with three different ways to answer that, and also a quick explanation of why that may be a good avenue or not so much. The first one, in my opinion, is the best one. Just get it appraised. In my situation, if I was to inherit a house and it was worth $1 million, $2 million, I wouldn't mind getting three appraisals done. However, keep in mind that the appraisers have latitude. They can pump that price up. They can pump that price down. They're typically looking for instructions from you, and sometimes they'll even ask what you think it's worth to get some guidance. What I'm looking for is I'm looking for a price that's fair that would have that house transacted usually within 3 to 6 months. Is that a fair
Whatever the market.
That's what the bank's going to ask. They're going to ask typically in PEI for 90 days.
Yeah. What are the average days on market for your area? And that would be typically how an appraiser should price a property.
So get between one and three appraisals done. Most people have a hard time getting one done, never mind three. Again, with me, Pennywise and Pound Foolish, if I do one appraisal, it comes in at 500 grand and two of them come in at six. I know the first appraisal is probably a little bit light. And I just made an extra 100 grand, hopefully, if those appraisals are valid, which usually they are, because most appraisers that I've come across, in fact, all of them have been pretty good. What about you?
Yes, I would say most are pretty good. I would almost wonder, though, if you had one that was 100,000 difference, if somewhere in the middle, maybe in this instance, the example that you've given, one at 500, two at 600, you'd probably end up selling that somewhere around 575.
Next is the CMA. We've talked about that. The comprehensive market analysis. This is something a real estate agent or broker would supply to you. It's very similar to the appraisal, but in the case of the appraiser, he's probably done 1,000 appraisals or more and gone through a mentorship for probably a number of years where any agent can get their license and the next day they're out there doing CMAs. The other thing about a CMA is it's sort of like letting the fox in the hen house, wouldn't you say?
Yes.
And why do you say that?
Well, because a CMA, especially if the realtor is looking maybe to get that listing, they're going to tell you what you want to hear or do what we call in our industry buy the listing, give you an inflated price, which a lot of sellers do, unfortunately. You price shop instead of shop for who has, you know, the best skill set. So whoever tells you what you want to hear that's the direction you end up going in. So a realtor could end up being biased towards themselves because they're trying to line their pocket, possibly.
Yeah, CMA is a touchy thing. And the way Patty and I do them is we don't provide a CMA. We actually do the CMA in front of the client so they can see the data set that we're working with. So the other 12 agents they're interviewing, because they're looking for the highest price and they want to find someone that's going to tell them what they want to hear, they already know the data. So anything that moves away from that data set, they know they're just blowing smoke up their ass.
Yeah. And just for clarification, my system right now for like 2025 and was for last year as well, is once I'm done going through the initial property, I do create what's called a custom collaboration site for my sellers. And I'll put in a bunch of properties in there that I used to help come up with my evaluation or my interpretation of the data. And I put that in for them to comb through as well, because I don't hold all the cards. This is a teamwork process here. So I do let them see, because they can't go through sold pictures, the sold listing pictures. So I'll make sure that's in. I just want clarification because I don't always do them in person now.
Well, if you're working for me, you would. And we'd be there for hours, maybe a whole week.
I think I'd be calling me then.
Now, the actual sales price, and this is what PEI was indicative of, was based on an emotionally driven market. If you're in a market that's emotionally driven, like PEI was absolutely insane during COVID because people were trying to escape from the big cities, now you have an emotional element where people are just cutting checks for properties not based on any common sense statistics or sale numbers or CMAs or appraisals. That's a difficult market to price in. Best thing you can do is do a reverse auction, which in essence is what real estate typically is, which is where you start high and you let the market ultimately decide the sale price. However, that can also come down to your agent's skill set and marketing abilities, because an emotionally driven price, they still have to be able to see the house, appreciate it, like the pictures, the video, the description, and so forth, to fall in love, to write that crazy offer. Now, we're seeing a lot less of that now. I've been following 5 or 6 properties of people that thought they could sell them on their own for these crazy numbers, and they're all still sitting there months later.
Which is what is causing our market. It has been a balanced market in favor of the sellers. Currently, it is more of a balanced market, and the more inventory that sits, because sellers are still pricing based on 2021 and 2022, is creating more inventory, which is the perfect opportunity for some buyers to come in this year and be able to pick up properties that are at a market value, more realistic price. They're not as inflated because the supply is starting to go up.
The emotional driven aspect has gone away. I'll let you wrap it up.
Well, thank you for listening to another episode of the Michael and Patty Show, otherwise known as MAPS, navigating and guiding you through the real estate buying and selling process and everything that we tend to discuss and talk about Prince Edward Island as well. We appreciate everyone who tunes in and listens. I get messages every week, usually from somebody new, thanking us for the education and the insight and us sharing all our knowledge, or just a little bit of our knowledge.
But if you are another real estate agent or broker in PEI thinking about doing a podcast, don't. Have a great day.
Yeah, thanks for listening. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon.